From the University of Texas at Austin, KUT Radio, this is In Black America.
These discussions need to take place because there's a history of the discussions not taking place. And when they do take place, oftentimes black folks are cast it as a monolith, and that all black men do this, all black women do that, and all black boys do this and do that, whatever. And you know that to be true when you spend time with your families over the holidays. Invariably, your family, if your family's like my family, they end up getting into an argument about what all men do and what all women do, and it goes back and forth and doesn't solve anything. In the academic field, there are conversations and discourse around African-American sexuality or folks of African descent sexuality. But the conversations and the manuscripts that are written, they're fragmented into other different journals. So there are several journals that, you know, folks will submit their manuscripts to. But it wasn't until this point that we as a community have our own journal where we can share our ideas and thoughts and research, as well as clinical best practices around the sexual expression of persons of African descent.
Dr. James C. Watley, Associate Professor and Director of the Master of Human Services Program at Lincoln University and founding editor of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships. Watley's academic and professional credentials in human sexuality education and educational leadership has enabled him to galvanize scholars and practitioners in the field of sexology around the world. The Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships is a scholarly referred invitation for researchers, clinicians, educators, and policymakers to explore and dialogue about the evolution of black sexuality and how it reveals itself in interpersonal relationships. Scholars from the field of psychology, sociology, cultural anthropology, human services, law, biology, sexology, and education have an opportunity to offer critical accounts and research about how sexuality manifests across various populations. I'm John L. Hampton, Jr., and welcome to another edition of In Black America. On this week's program, the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships with Dr. James C. Watley, In Black America.
Oftentimes, in the narratives, they depicted black folks as having accentuated body parts or being what we call hypersexual or being unable to control themselves. Those stereotypes and myths have carried on throughout centuries, even up until today, where if you look at, you know, some of the role models or even athletes or, you know, other black prominent figures, oftentimes they are not given credited for what they do or their intellect or their acquisition of resources. They're only given credit based upon who they are perceived to be sexually. And what that does is that minimizes and negates who we are as a collective whole, and it does not give us an opportunity to be who we are as individuals.
Dr. James C. Watley has served as a clinician and mental health consultant in the metropolitan Philadelphia area for over 15 years. As a scholar practitioner, he is a licensed professional counselor and maintains a private practice in the states of Pennsylvania and New Jersey. Watley received his Doctorate of Philosophy degree in education from the University of Pennsylvania with a concentration in educational leadership and human sexuality education. He earned a Master's of Science in Education degree in school psychology from the University of Kentucky after completing his BA in psychology from Hampton University. The Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships is a scholarly referred invitation for researchers, clinicians, educators, and policymakers to explore and dialogue about the evolution of black sexuality and how it reveals itself in interpersonal relationships. Scholars from the field of psychology, sociology, cultural anthropology, human services, law, biology, sexology, and education have an opportunity to offer critical accounts and research about how sexuality manifests itself across various populations.
Both my parents went to HBCUs. My mother went to Morris Brown College down in Atlanta. And then my father went to Xavier University there in Louisiana. And so when it was time for me to choose a college, I really didn't have a choice. So they were like, you going to a black school, no way around it. So I ended up choosing Hampton over Howard University because, you know, Howard is in a somewhat challenged neighborhood and my folks didn't want to have to deal with that anxiety. over being down there in Southeast D.C. So, nevertheless, Hampton was good to me, and Hampton was good for me for 4 years.
And what sparked that interest in psychology?
Well, in high school, I knew a lot of people, and I would find myself, I'd come home and, you know, folks would call me and tell me their business about life, love, and happiness. And I always thought it would be cool if I could make a paycheck from people telling me their business, since it wasn't that far of a stretch for me. So I ended up going into psychology at Hampton, and, you know, there were a lot of great folks there when I was coming through. They wanted me, and they pushed all of us to go to graduate school, so that was always on my radar. I ended up doing research in gender issues and gender identity while I was there, and I ended up getting a grant or a fellowship to go to the University of Kentucky. Kentucky wanted me to wait before I went for my doctorate, and long story short, I ended up thinking that, you know, if I ever stopped, I'd never want to go back to school, and I ended up at the University of Pennsylvania to finish up.
Tell us, what does a doctorate in philosophy degree in education entails?
It depends upon the concentration. You know, you can go and get a PhD or EdD in higher education, elementary education, or in my case, educational leadership. My specific concentration was human sexuality education, and so my program was geared towards teaching and research about human sexuality and sensitive issues. My program was only one of three in the country at the time that was devoted specifically towards doing human sexuality work. That was us, NYU, and then there's the Institute for Advanced Study in Human Sexuality out in San Francisco. And so my program, you know, dealt with, you know, the continuum of sexuality and sexual expression. And that, too, was a great experience because, you know, everyone was supportive. The classes were engaging. And the skills and knowledge that I acquired, it was beyond comparison.
And your first job out of college?
My first job out of college, I ended up going to, I did postgraduate work, so I didn't necessarily take on a full-time job. I did postgraduate work at Thomas Jefferson University, and I guess if I did have a first job, I was a therapist for special needs kids and their families.
When we speak of human sexuality education, what are we speaking of?
Talking about, again, the continuum of sexuality. So, you know, a lot of times when people talk about sex, they think about sex, you know, most times it is about, you know, intercourse or possibly relationships or things of that nature. But sexuality is comprised of gender and sexual orientation, intimacy, issues about culture and race, issues about religion. And so anything that comprises who one is or who one projects themselves to be is what sexuality encompasses.
When did you come to the notion that a journal regarding Black sexuality and relationships needed to take place, needed to be in the marketplace?
I guess it's developed over the past 20 years, and I guess I'm showing my age now. And I'm saying that because when I was in graduate school, a colleague of mine and I, you know, we had kind of kicked around the idea of, you know, trying to tailor sexuality education, as well as being a sex therapy or a clinician, to the interests of folks of African descent or folks who identify themselves as African American. So we had developed some curricula around working with Black adolescents. And when both of us finished school, you know, we ended up losing touch with one another. But I've always just kept that in the back of my mind. And so I guess my career kind of angled towards doing writing and doing research on sexuality and sexual health issues. And so I actually started to work on a manuscript. And I had invited scholars from across the country to contribute essays and articles for the book, and I ended up getting about six different chapters for the book. And you know, it sat in my desk for a while because, you know, I had some family stuff that had emerged. So after about 7 or 8 months, I looked at it again, and I was like, well, you know what, I need to go ahead and finish this manuscript and get it out. So I started to work on the manuscript, and I just kind of pulled back, and I was like, well, I don't want to write a book on black sexuality, because there are a number of manuscripts that had just come out in the past 2 or 3 years devoted towards black sexuality, and I figured I'd do a journal. So and the difference between a journal and a book is that a journal is a ongoing collection of essays and manuscripts geared towards, in this case, black sexuality. It isn't necessarily available to the lay community unless they are familiar with the author or the scholar and his or her work. And so I sent out a proposal to a few different publishers, and the response that I got back was, it was great. And they had responded back so quickly that it enabled me to reach out to other publishers. And so the University of Nebraska Press got my proposal, and, you know, they said, James, let's go for it. And, you know, here we are today. And so the first issue actually just came out this past month. And, you know, there's been a tremendous buzz over over the journal.
I understand. If you're just joining us, you're listening to In Black America from KUT Radio, and I'm speaking with Dr. Jane Whatley, Associate Professor and Director of the Master of Human Services Program at Lincoln University, and also the founder and editor of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships. Dr. Whatley, why is it important from an academic and also a professional standpoint that these discussions need to take place?
These discussions need to take place because there's a history of the discussions not taking place. Mm-hmm. And when they do take place, oftentimes black folks are casted as a monolith, in that all black men do this, all black women do that, and all black boys do this and do that, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know that to be true when you spend time with your families over the holidays. Invariably, your family, if your family's like my family, but end up getting into an argument about what all men do and what all women do, and it goes back and forth and doesn't solve anything. In the academic field, there are conversations or discourse around African-American sexuality or folks of African descent sexuality, but the conversations and the manuscripts that are written, they're fragmented into other different journals. So there are several journals that, you know, folks will submit their manuscripts to, but It wasn't until this point that we as a community have our own journal where we can share our ideas and thoughts and research, as well as clinical best practices around the sexual expression of persons of African descent. And what that might look like, and what separates us from, say, other races or other ethnic groups, is that, you know, we meaning black folks, we are the only people to be brought over here to a quote-unquote free country in servitude, meaning that we didn't choose to come here, we were forced to come here. And based upon that history and the legacy of that history up until that point, we have developed ideas about ourselves, about our culture, and about the dominant culture that may or may not fit within our own personal scheme. So, for example, the events that happened in Ferguson, Missouri, basically there is a wonderful discussion going on about how black men construct masculinity, and that as men, we are taught to be dominant and assertive and aggressive and independent and all those other things, but then when faced by the law, we are expected to acquiesce, or as the chance went, hands up, don't shoot. And so having that dialogue about, you know, masculinity as it relates to that, or even having a dialogue about how femininity is constructed, where we teach our black girls to be passive and submissive and dependent and serve as caretakers or nurturers, but then when they have partners who engage them in intimate partner violence, to what extent are they able or willing to offer their voice about whatever it is that's going on? And so having those sensitive conversations actually comes out in the journal, as well as, you know, giving, we feel it's our responsibility to try to communicate that to the larger community, that as black folks, you know, we're not a monolith, and not all black folks think, feel, believe, and behave the same way.
How did you all come to a conclusion or a hypothesis of slavery having a direct effect on our sexuality and our relationships?
Well, if you look at the work of scholars such as Kenneth Stamp, who wrote The Slave Community, there was Overseas, who was a historian who goes by the last name Overseas. I can't remember his first name. He wrote about the black slave trade, as well as John Blasingame, who also wrote about the pre-antebellum days. The descriptions that were offered by the folks of African descent in their slave narratives, and the descriptions of the white folks who owned slaves and those white folks who didn't own slaves, they depict black Americans as being, objectifying black folks. And what I mean by that is that oftentimes in the narratives, they depicted black folks as having accentuated body parts or being what we call hypersexual or being unable to control themselves. Mm-hmm. Those stereotypes and myths have carried on throughout centuries, even up until today, where if you look at, some of the role models or even athletes or, other black prominent figures, oftentimes they are not given credited for what they do or their intellect or their acquisition of resources. They're only given credit based upon who they are perceived to be sexually. Mm-hmm. And what that does is that minimizes and negates who we are as a collective whole, and it does not give us an opportunity to be who we are as individuals.
Yeah, I understand. Also, what was interesting in reading the forward to the journal is that sexuality is influenced by class structure, racial stratification, and access to resources?
Yes. And what that means is that if you take the intersection of race, of class, of gender, and sexuality, we know that there are folks who are in impoverished areas, and they may be more likely to engage in, have an initial onset of sex, meaning that if you have kids who are 9, 10, 11, 12, they are possibly, kids become more sexually active now than what they did 20 or 30 years ago based upon their socioeconomic status.
Okay.
Meaning that if you have a kid who lives in the suburb who has access to different resources, educational resources, and community health centers, they may be less likely to engage in initial onset of sex than somebody who lives in the inner city where there may be fewer resources. And so part of the thrust of the journal is to talk about the concept and the sensitivity of intersectionality, which is, the intersection or the juncture of race, gender, sex, class, ability, sexual orientation, and the like.
I understand. Dr. Wiley, as a child growing up in the 60s, we had the talk, as they would say, but with the internet and social media, how is this generation learning about sexuality and relationships?
So the difference between, kids who are growing up today versus 30, 40, 50 years ago is that, in the 50s and the 60s, while the paradox is that, during the women's rights movements and the women's rights movement, women's liberation movement, as well as the sexuality revolution, there was talk among adults, but there was little talk with kids. Moving through the 70s and the 80s and the early 90s with the onset of HIV infection, those conversations in schools as well as in community centers as well as in other locales, the conversation about sexuality and sensitive issues tended to increase in order to reduce the likelihood of people acquiring a sexually transmitted infection. Nowadays, sex is everywhere, whether it's through social media or on TV or on the radio, or if you see it on a billboard, sex is everywhere. And so there are more opportunities for discussion, and I believe that there are more and more parents who are more comfortable talking with their kids about sexuality and sensitive issues, only because kids nowadays, one, they're exposed to more, and then two, because kids' health is much better than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. You know, kids are developing faster than they did during that time, which means that, you know, girls have a earlier onset of menstruation, and boys are experience nocturnal emission or having a wet dream at night, only because their health is much better than it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. And so the conversations are around us all the time, and sometimes parents, they are more willing to engage than they may have been 30, 40, 50 years ago.
How do you all go about deciding what will be included in any particular journal? Because I'm looking at the journal in which you sent me, and there's a cross-section of topics that are discussed in this particular issue.
Right. So what happens is that, you know, scholars from across the country, and basically I guess I've gotten them across the world, they send in articles to me, and what happens is that I send them out to the editorial board. The editorial board is comprised of folks who have done tremendous work in the field of what we call sexology with regards to research and or clinical practice. So I send out the manuscript to those folks, and I send it out blindly, which means that they don't know who you are and you don't know who they are.
Okay.
They then give feedback to the scholar, and they send the feedback as well as the manuscript back to me, and then I forward it on back to the original author. The author then has the opportunity to make revisions to his or her manuscript, and then if they make revisions and, you know, they end up sending it back to me, and then we go back and forth to hammer it out until it is up to publishable quality. So then, you know, like at the end of the quarter, I send it into the journal, and then it gets published. So there were a significant number of folks who had submitted manuscripts for, you know, this last issue as well as this current issue that will be out in January. And you're right, there is a cross-section of sexuality-related topics. And the reason for that is that sexuality is based upon a continuum, and there are many strands and many layers to sexual expression. And so, you know, you may, in the previous issue, you may have found an article about, you know, condom use on black campuses or sexual decision-making. And then there was another one about people's experiences with their clinicians and whether or not they should come out or disclose that they are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered. You know, in another, I just got an article from a woman who wrote about black women's experiences in massage parlors. Or I got another article from another gentleman that discussed skin tone, perceptions of skin tone as it relates to masculinity in Ferguson, Missouri. So the range of articles, it's going to vary. And what's nice about it is that with each article or manuscript that's published, it gives us or the reader or the community a glimpse into the nuances of what makes black sexuality so special, powerful, and significant.
Yeah, I understand. As an individual who attended a HBCU and I've spent all my professional career on a college campus, it was interesting in this particular edition, the exploration of the sexual behaviors of emerging adult men attending historically black colleges and universities. Can you give us a thumbnail of what that particular essay is about?
Yeah, the essay, let me pull it up. The essay was written by a few scholars there,
right,
in Atlanta and around. And what was nice about the essay is that it talks about the sexual expression, obviously, of young black males at HBCUs, meaning that for some black men, because I identify myself as being a black American, we don't always make good decisions around our sexuality, meaning that we know about condom use.
Mm-hmm.
We know that condoms protect against sexually transmitted infections, including an unplanned pregnancy. But then when it comes down to it, sometimes we don't make the best decision in the moment. To illustrate that point from, not necessarily from that article, but from a different study that was done, actually that I did, it was about health focus groups with some black males who attended an HBCU. And what happened was that a guy described that he had met this young woman at a campus event, and he thought that she was the most attractive person on campus. She and him went back to his room. He had condoms in his nightstand table. The both of them had disrobed, and before he had pulled the condom out of his nightstand table, he had already climbed on top of him, and they had already started having sex with him having the condom in his hand. And so to illustrate that, to further provide an example, is that, you know, for the authors who wrote the article Sexual Behaviors of Emerging Adult Black Men, is that basically sometimes black men or we don't always make good decisions around our sexual expression.
Is there any truth to the notion that sexuality and relationships can be hurt or hindered from the relationships that our parents had with each other?
Yes. Yes. So for some couples, well, here, when some couples come to see me, we spend time talking about what's called the family of origin issues, mm-hmm. which is, tell me about the relationship that you had with your parents, whether it's your mom, your dad, your guardian, grandmother, grandfather, whomever, and then tell me what messages you learned about sex and how that might play itself out in your current relationship. And a lot of times, parents haven't talked to their kids about sex. So what folks learn about sex is that sex should be kept in a secret, or it's not something that's readily discussed. And what happens is that when people enter relationships is that they haven't had the practice to talk about sex. So when they're with their partners, it can be somewhat awkward as well as somewhat of a daunting task. And for those families who have healthy relationships where they can talk about sex, you know, possibly openly in their homes, more often than not, those children that grow up in those homes, they find themselves to be more comfortable talking about sexuality and sensitive issues.
Dr. Wilder, before we run out of time, during my era growing up, there was homophobia in the African-American community in which I lived. Have we gotten far past those type of conversations and incidents?
We have, but we still have a lot of work to do and a long way to go. We still live in a very, as you mentioned, homophobic society where people have the irrational fear towards gays, lesbians, and bisexuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we are also operating in a society which we call heterosexist, which is the assumption that everyone is or should be heterosexual.
Dr. James C. Watley, Associate Professor and Director of the Masters of Human Services Program at Lincoln University and founding editor of the Journal of Black Sexuality and Relationships. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions as to future In Black America programs, email us at jhanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at kut.org. Also, let us know what radio station you heard us over. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station or of the University of Texas at Austin. You can hear previous programs online at kut.org. Until we have the opportunity again for technical producer David Alvarez, I'm Johnny O'Hanson Jr. Thank you for joining us today. Please join us again next week.
CD copies of this program are available and may be purchased by writing In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. That's In Black America CDs, KUT Radio, 300 West Dean Keaton Boulevard, Austin, Texas, 78712. This has been a production of KUT Radio.